We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Always great to be joined by Mike Vaccaro, who is always so generous with his time, and we want to make sure that we thank him for that and acknowledge that. Michael, how are you, my friend?
Chris, how are you doing, my friend?
Good, good. Can't complain, although it's certainly in vogue right now to do a lot of complaining.
Also, like I was telling Ed, I said, you know, who really wants to hear about it if there's something going wrong? Only
yeah, exactly.
Everybody's got a hassle right now, so that's the
it really is. It's
the way it is.
Yeah, and it wears on you over time. How are you with the struggle of health versus economy in the sports world? As all these leagues, you know, lose money, they wrestle with these decisions that are all based on money as to whether to play, when to play, how to play. We watch the NCAA struggle big time with it and these kids. And then, you know, you just overall, you realize the whole country is in the same debate. Sports is just a microcosm of it. Economy versus health and what the right thing to do is. Boy, I feel for all these decision makers. How about for you? What's it been like?
You know, Chris, all I know is that I've been glued to the TV every Sunday in a way that I haven't in a lot of years past. Now, part of that is because most years on most Sundays, I'd be, you know, at one game and would just kind of focus my energies on that. But, you know, when you cover games remotely, I mean, the game you cover is, you know, just part of the greater tapestry of Sunday, right? And I do find myself kind of, it allows me for at least a day a week to feel like things are normal. Because even though the NFL obviously doesn't have these full stadiums, and even though you know, there are all these ancillary issues with COVID. It really does approximate regular times when you watch those games on Sunday and Monday and Thursday and the occasional Tuesday this year. And I don't want to say I feel guilty about that, but when the days are over, I'm always like, well, you know, I feel good about that. Now, I'm not sure if that's for the greater good or not, but I know that I had a good time watching those games. I felt a little different during baseball because baseball just felt different. And maybe that was because I was at more baseball games. And I think when you were at baseball games, it was hard to perpetuate the illusion that things were normal, you know, as opposed to what you see on TV. And the whole other issue to me is college sports because, I mean, it's just there's this overriding issue that, you know, it's free laborers who are putting themselves at risk so that, you know, coaches can make $8 million a year, and the networks can make their money, and the leagues can make their money, and that brings a whole different set of ethics, I think, and it's a little harder to embrace. And I say that at the end of a day where I've watched five football games, so I mean, maybe I'm just the biggest hypocrite in the world.
Yeah, but I mean, the games are on whether you watch them or not, so I don't look at it. I understand the push pull, but I don't look at it as hypocritical. But I think it's a real, you know, it's a real issue. I don't think it reflects greatly on American society or just how big things have gotten. And you talk about the $8 million salaries, and we don't think about it much because, you know, it just gets in the way of our enjoyment. And for us, it's a pastime. But it's
right.
Times like this where, you know, you say to yourself, just because you've had, you know, this dessert out here all the time doesn't mean you deserve to eat it every year. I mean, sometimes things happen and everybody has to sacrifice. And I feel, I don't know, I'm very conflicted about the college especially, decision-making process for these kids. And yet, what pulls on us, and I know you agree, these kids want to play. They don't want this part of their life to go away and not have the opportunity to play. So, you know, it's not like you're forcing them into doing something that, geez, I don't feel good about this, but you're making me do it. They want to play. I mean, that's what really muddies the water, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And, you know, it's going to be really interesting, Chris. I think, you know, college basketball is supposed to start this week, and there's probably 35 to 40 programs. That's probably a low-end number that are in pause right now, you know, because it does seem that, for better or worse, college basketball is taking its protocols. I shouldn't say taking it seriously, but their protocols are a lot more stringent. You know, one tier one participant gets it, they pause for 2 weeks. That's a pretty stringent pause. I mean, you know, if you have two or three of those in the course of a season, you don't have much of a season. And yet it's hard for me to complain about that. I mean, look, this week it kind of hit me this week, Chris, to be honest with you, in a way that's different. Look, I mean, I cover these teams, but I'm not a fan of any of these teams. But I am a fan of my alma mater, St. Bonaventure, and St. Bonaventure basketball took a two-week pause this week. And I have to admit, I was looking, they were supposed to be playing in this Mohegan Sun event over Thanksgiving, and I was looking forward to a couple of days where I was going to watch the Bonnies play. And look, when that news came down, my first reaction is I was bummed. You know? It was, you know, I was disappointed. It was, I wasn't thinking about the other things. You know, of course, then, you know, 5 minutes later, you realize, well, that's for the best because you want these kids to be healthy, and you know, you want everybody to be careful and cautious. And, you know, but, you know, I think that's part of the whole thing about sports. And you and I talk about this regularly as a theme. I mean, there's the intellectual part of us that understands certain things have to be the way they are. And there's the fanatical part of us that just wants to see the games and want the teams to win and, you know, go team go. And those two things aren't necessarily terribly compatible.
No, and in this environment, they really, you know, you're forced into it, whether you want to think about it or not. You know, people have told us all along, and I'm sure you've heard it too in what you write, you know, leave COVID out of it, you know, separate it. We want to hear about sports, as if you can separate the two. And every day we're reminded that you can't separate the two. So as great a goal as that would be to separate sports from COVID, it is clearly not possible, and every day is more proof of that. Let's get to the Knicks. That you seem to be fairly happy with the Toppin pick and the general direction of the front office. We know that it isn't going to change the Knicks' fortunes this coming season in terms of wins and losses, but overall, your thoughts, and what about Halliburton, who so many people thought might be such a good fit for a team in need of a distributor?
Well, I mean, look, to me, if the Knicks had identified Halliburton as their point guard of the future, then, or any of the other point guards for that matter, then to me, they made a mistake by not getting him. But it's pretty clear that the Knicks, along with other teams, by the way, may not have been as high on him as certain people who put together mock drafts were, or certain fans were. And look, I mean, all we got to do with the Knicks is look on their own roster. I mean, Dennis Smith Jr. had the same kind of hype coming out of the draft, his draft year. People thought the Knicks had made a huge mistake by not picking him, and you know, LeBron James predicted stardom for him. And, you know, it's as impactful and important as a point guard is in the NBA, that's the good ones. I mean, it's not easy to find a good one. Not everybody is John Morant, and not everybody is Westbrook. I mean, it's a tricky thing. To me, if the Knicks weren't 100% sold on Halliburton or anybody else as their point guard of the future, then I think they absolutely did the right thing and they got the best player. I mean, this kid's going to be good. I mean, what I like about him, you know, is he's already accomplished, you know, and he still has so much. It seems like there's still so much higher a ceiling he could reach, certainly on defense. And to me, I mean, you know, so often in the NBA draft, you know, you know, teams pick players on spec.
Right.
You know, and part of that is the game. Part of that is trying to say, well, I'm picking this kid at 20 years old. You know, what's he going to be at age 25? And that's part of the game, is being able to get that right. But to me, I think there's also something to be said for picking players who are accomplished. And I think what the Knicks did with their two first-round draft picks is pick accomplished players. I mean, you know, Toppin was the consensus player of the year, and you don't win those awards in the lottery. You know, and Quickly was the SEC player of the year. Maybe the SEC wasn't as powerful top to bottom as they've been in years past, but he was the best player on Kentucky, which was the best team in the SEC by two or three games. You know, and I think that speaks highly of him. So, and look, I mean, to me, I mean, it's the thing you can't forget about is that the Knicks now are coached by a guy who knows what he's doing, who has some gravitas, who I think the players, you know, are going to listen to from day one. Now, what does that respond? What does that translate to? Does that translate to 35 wins? Does it translate to something better than that? I doubt it's going to be better than that because I just don't think the pieces are there. But I also think that unlike in eras past, it does seem like this group is committed to trying to put something together that works. And if it takes more than 15 minutes to do that, then they're going to do that. And I think that's the wise course of action.
Did the Heat give this league some hope by coming out of nowhere basically the way they did?
It's a really great point, Chris. And it's not just, you know, what they did. It's how they did it. I mean, look, Jimmy Butler is a great player, but you know, I don't think that if you're just having a casual conversation with a basketball fan, his name is going to come up in the first 5 minutes of the conversation. But what they had was a bunch of pieces that worked well together, a bunch of guys that seemed to gel at the most, you know, at the most perfect time of the year. And you know, look, I mean, ultimately that didn't bear a championship because you know, most of the time in basketball, if you have the, you know, the two best players in the court, you're going to win. And that's what the Lakers had. But I agree with you. I do think that they kind of reinforce the notion that while it is a star-driven league, you can also still win in the old-fashioned way, which is getting guys to buy into a plan, getting guys to buy into a coach, getting guys to buy into each other. And when you have that, you know, I mean, and to me, it makes Knicks fans feel good because they have a coach who is showing himself capable of bringing together guys and, you know, make them possibly better than the sum of the parts. And I think he did that in Chicago. I think he did that very briefly in Minnesota before it went sideways on him. And look, I mean, I think that's what the Knicks hired, or at least that's what they hope they hired with Thibodeau. I mean, they don't, you know, I've already seen people talk about the tank this year. I mean, look, if this team wins 18 games this year, it's going to be an abject failure. I don't think it's that bad a team. I don't think it's a good team. I don't think it's a playoff team. And so you might ask, well, what's the degrees of awfulness and what difference does it make? But I do think that when you're talking about trying to build something real and lasting, you do look for small steps forward. I think that's what the Knicks can possibly give you this year.
Mike Vaccaro, The Post, joining us here on The Fan. Chris Moore with you on a Saturday night, talking about a lot of different things. You know, the thing that I liked about the Heat story to me, and I know Eric Reidwell, who's their play-by-play guy, TV play-by-play guy, you know, he was talking about how next year they're going to have space, and you want to be a destination, don't you, these days? Like, Steve Cohen takes over the Mets now, and there's new life. There's a breath of, hey, this might be a good place to go now. He sounds like he's going to spend money. He's going to enjoy it. He's going to bring some enthusiasm in, and you got Spoelstra and Riley down in Miami, and they've just shown what they can do with Butler and Adebayo and Tyler Herro and, you know, a bunch of guys and Dragic, and it all worked out. Maybe this is a good place to go. So my point is, don't you now, in this world of everybody's making millions anyway, don't you have to be a place where players want to go now to get the real top-notch talent? You have to prove that you've earned it in the front office as well?
Absolutely, and I think that was proven last year with what happened, you know, in our own backyard. I mean, you know, the thought for decades that the two best players in a free agent class would pick the Nets over the Knicks was unthinkable because the Knicks were the Garden, the Knicks were New York, the Knicks were Manhattan. But you know, those are things that aren't nearly as important to guys anymore as believing they're going to a place where they're going to be maximized and have the best chance to succeed. And I think that's what made Brooklyn so attractive to Durant, certainly, and you know, secondarily to Kyrie, and now makes it attractive to Harden, and which what makes the Knicks so unappealing for the time being. But you know what? The Knicks do still have those inherent advantages to where if they can only prove over a period of longer than, you know, 2 months, that they know what they're doing and they're going in the right direction. And look, I mean, they're run now by a guy that all the primetime players know and know well. And they're advised by a guy that they know even better. And so that's going to help. And I think what's going to help more is if Thibodeau is able to instill a sense of professionalism and a sense of expectation that things are going to be different here. Again, I don't think it's necessarily going to attract Giannis here one way or the other. But, I mean, just to use him as an example, if you're going to have a shot at attracting someone like Giannis, I mean, you have to give him the opportunity to believe he's going to come here and be in a position where he's better than the place where he's going to leave or the other places he can go. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be ready to win a championship, you know, next year. But I do think it has to prove that you're going in that particular direction. And that's just something the Knicks haven't been able to show anybody, you know, in the last 20 years at all. I mean, even their one aberration 54-win year, you know, when you look at it in context, I mean, it just seems that a lot of things went right that year. And they were relying on a bunch of 38, 39-year-old players to get it done. So, you know, when you look at it with the luxury of time and context, you know that that wasn't sustainable. And what they're trying to do is what they haven't done really since the latter part of the 90s, which is to build something and make it sustainable and make it and thereby make it attractive to other people to want to come play here.
Yeah, I mean, that's really – is it too Pollyanna to say Steve Cohen has done that to the Mets, made it a destination rather than a place that, you know, I'd rather not go to the Mets. They're not – you look at that division, they're not as well-run as any of these other teams. You know, Washington's won already. Atlanta's on the upswing. You know, why do I want to go to the Mets? So all of a sudden now you just get the sense that perhaps that has changed. Is that going to have to be proven, or do you think it's already changed?
Well, I think we'll probably be able to speak with more authority about that in 6 weeks when we know, you know, when everything kind of shakes out and we see, you know, who they get and who they don't get and why they come and why they don't come. But I will say this, I think immediately, I mean, you know, it's pretty clear to everybody in baseball that he is serious about winning. He understands what that means, and that one of the aspects of how he's going to invest his vast fortune is going to be in the right free agent, and he's not going to be undersold. That's why it's going to be fascinating to see what is with D.J. LeMahieu, because, I mean, the one thing I'm pretty sure of is if he really wants D.J. LeMahieu, he may not get him, but he's not going to be outspent by the Yankees or anybody else. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. But, I mean, you know, when you have that kind of mindset, I think the Mets are clearly going to add one or two guys that they wouldn't have been in play for previously. And that just makes a whole different narrative around you. And look, and it's not just the money thing, Chris. I mean, when you look at Steve Cohen, and certainly you can, if you take a deep dive, you can question how he accumulated the fortune he accumulated and, you know, if there are any corners that were cut or any of that stuff. I mean, certainly that's part of the conversation around him. But the fact is he's been wildly successful, but he's been wildly successful in a way that is transferable to sports, I believe, because he's hired the best people. You know, he's trusted them to do what they do well, you know, and by which their success will allow him to succeed. And it's why I actually believe him when he says that he's going to, you know, try and hire the best people and just be a, you know, just be a fan who have his own team. I mean, I don't think he's going to be Steinbrenerian in the way that he approaches operating the Mets. I mean, I could be wrong, and in 5 years you might play this tape back at me and we'll both have a nice laugh at it. But I really believe that because I do think that in his primary business, that's how he does think. And I think that that's transferable to how you run a successful baseball team.
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to 97 high Zynga it with the Marlins either, where he just acquires all he can, ticks off the other owners, basically buys a championship and then says, well, that was fun, see ya. I just don't see him in that mode. I think that he may grab the back pages a few times, but not necessarily on purpose, just on his way to putting a 26-man roster that he's proud of. Some of the signings are going to be back page grabbers, but, you know, he's not, in other words, I don't think he's going to put the cart before the horse. I don't think he wants to win the back page more than he wants to win on the field. Sometimes with the Knicks, I don't, you know, sometimes with the Knicks, I don't know about that. But with him, I think that's really what he wants.
And for the years when the Steinbrenner Yankees weren't any good, I mean, it was partly because Steinbrenner was more concerned with winning the back page war from the Mets than winning, you know, than beating the Brewers on the field.
Right.
And that was self-destructive. I think one of the things that, look, I mean, again, this is another thing that maybe in 5 years we'll look back on. You'll say, how could you have been taken so easily? But the thing about Cohen that I think I appreciate, and I think that people who root for the Mets appreciate is, look, I think he's dropped enough fence where you don't have to make him take a loyalty oath for just how big a fan he is. It's clear how big a fan he is. I mean, the tweeting out the other day about Bobby Bonilla was hilarious. You know, I mean,
yeah.
And you just can't imagine another owner in any context having that kind of, you know, that kind of outlook to be able to say that. But it doesn't just show like he's got a sense of humor, but it shows that he actually is. You know, every Mets fan you know has tortured himself. What is it, July 1st every year when
yes.
when Bonilla gets his check? And I mean,
yes.
it's obvious that, you know, in his other life, you know, he was stewing in a boardroom someplace every July 1st. He was mad as hell that Bobby Bonilla was getting, the kind of check, you know, with the money that Steve Cohen could probably find in the cushions of his couch. So, I mean, there's no denying the legitimacy of his interest in wanting the Mets to do well from a fan standpoint. And he just happens to have the kind of deep pockets. You know, like, I mean, I think we all fantasize, if I rule the world, if I own this team, if I own that team, he's able to kind of live that fantasy for all of us.
Are you in agreement with me that we might be in for the best 10 years concurrently of Yankee-Met baseball, given that both teams operate now with pride? Both teams don't want to lose that back page, even though, you know, they'd rather win on the field, but they're sensitive to the other's success. I just think that this will spur the Yankees a little bit, who've had a drought of championships, even though they've been a successful team. And now you've got Cohen, who's clearly there at this point in his life for one reason, and that's to build a champion. I think that as a baseball fan, and God knows these New York fans in general deserve it with our football and basketball, that we're in for a great 10 years of baseball between Yankees and Mets, and that your columns are going to get pretty easy to write for a while.
You know what, Chris? We're due that, because think about this. I mean,
we are.
The teams have shared the town for 59 years.
Yeah.
59 years they've shared the town. I mean, has there been 10 years where they've both been in legitimate serious contenders? I mean, a couple of years in the 90s, a couple of years, you know, one or two years in the 80s, nothing before that. And subsequently, you know, a stolen year here or there. I mean, they're both in the playoffs in 2015. But, I mean, I bet you can't come up with 10 years where the Mets and the Yankees are both considered to be, you know, actual legitimate contenders.
No, and it just seems like a DNA thing now, doesn't it? Like, it's in the DNA of Cohen and the Steinbrenner clan to compete, to be near the top, some years you're going to get injuries, some years you're going to disappoint. But in general, they're not going to sit around saying 81 and 81 is okay. It's just not going to be that way for now. And that's, you know, that's what we're talking about. Not a flash in the pan success, but an organization success where they're built well. They make good decisions. They're right more than they're wrong. That's what I'm looking forward to, is just sort of a pathway where one year they win 90, one year they win 98, one year, you know, they win 87, and it's disappointing. I'm looking for that, and maybe we'll get it.
And one of the things that that always kind of angers me when people talk about the Yankees is, you know, the easy and the lazy narrative around the Yankees. Well, they buy everybody, they have more money, they have more resources. That may be true, but A, they don't buy every player. That's been shown, and much to their fans' frustration over the last couple of years. But why they are good every year is because they're run smartly. They're run as a modern sporting business should be run. I mean, there's an incredible infrastructure in place. There's an incredible understanding of analytics. There's an incredible understanding of international presence and, you know, where things should properly be invested. I mean, they've done that all properly, all well. And they were ahead of the curve a little bit on all of it. And that's why they're good. That's why the Dodgers are good. I mean, you know, the Dodgers signed Mookie Betts, but look at the guys who make up their day-to-day lineup. I mean, you know, every October you watch the Dodgers for the first time in a year, and you're like, how in the world do they win 105 games with this guy playing, you know, center field every year? I mean, they do have their stars, but they have a strong organization. I think that's what, you know, good teams do, and I think that's what the Mets aspire to. I think that's what the problem. Look, it was easy to always point to the Wilpons and say, well, you're not spending money on Mookie Betts, or you're not spending money, you know, to retain Daniel Murphy, or you're not spending money here or there. But to me, if you're going to complain about how they spent their money or didn't spend their money, it's that their operation was way off to where a big market team could be able to do. I mean, their minor league system was always seemed to be a couple of steps behind. Their operation system seemed to be a couple of steps behind. And the infrastructure just wasn't nearly what the Yankees is, or what the Red Sox is, or what the Cubs is, or what the Dodgers is. And there's no excuse for that when you're in a major market. And now, of course, I think you have a guy in charge who understands just how important all of that is. And I think that's what's going to make them and the Yankees kind of be equals now, because they understand what's important and what you have to pay for to make things that are important translate to wins.
Yeah, no patching with Batistas and Gonzaleses and Jose Reyes at the end of his career. You know, I think that'll be something that Met fans can enjoy right off the bat. Let me close with this, and I appreciate all the time. What was your reaction and your thoughts about Theo Epstein's comments as he stepped down and just talking about the aesthetics of baseball and how he'd like to see it improve? It was nice to see somebody in that role admit that, you know, look, we're still an entertainment business, and we got to at least look at some of these things. It was nice for me, anyway, to hear it. What did you think?
Yeah, it was great to hear that. And, of course, all that does is make you wistful, because I think he's the guy who I think most baseball fans would sign up for tomorrow to be the commissioner of baseball, as opposed to the guy who's currently commissioner of baseball.
Right, right.
Who I think is so diametrically on the other side of all the things that Theo was talking about. And, I don't think always for the good of the sport right now. The last time we had a guy who was kind of a pie-eyed fan, you know, was another Red Sox guy named Bart Giamatti. And, you know, people loved him as commissioner, but I don't think long-term, had he lived, that his legacy as commissioner would have been all that great, because I think he was fixing to get just slaughtered in the coming labor wars, and he was kind of spared that, unfortunately, by dying when he did. And so his successors, you know, kind of took the brunt of that, Faye Vince and certainly Bud Selig. I don't know that while theoretically Theo Epstein would be a wonderful commissioner because he espouses so much of what we want, you know, the commissioner, that job is not an easy one, and it entails a lot of other stuff. I also don't know that Rob Manfred is the guy for that job either, unfortunately. So I think what you want is someone who kind of has Manfred's kind of bulldog background to be able to kind of, you know, keep things in line, but you also want someone like Theo who understands the subtleties and is never going to call the commissioner's trophies, you know, a pile of metal. And, you know, just seemingly sometimes go out of his way to try and alienate baseball fans.
Yeah, and I think, you just wonder about these commissioners in general, just how much power they have and whether they're spokespeople or really decision makers. And the more you watch and the older you get, the less faith you have that they're able to think for themselves or really come up with anything that will help. So it's kind of tough. You know, it's kind of tough.
Right.
Hey, Mike, appreciate it very much. Thanks for a half hour. Hopefully we'll do it again soon, and stay healthy, will you?
Awesome, Chris. Happy Thanksgiving.
All right, same to you. That's Mike Vaccaro of The Post. Of course, you can read him there. Takes care of us. Does a nice job. Always shares. And I could talk to him about a million things, you know.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.